Kenyatta International Airport was almost empty. Officials sipped at their morning tea as they checked over passports. In the baggage area, a creaky conveyor belt slowly disgorged luggage. Amo was nowhere in sight, so I took a seat on my carry-on bag and lit a cigarette. After a few minutes, a security guard with a wooden club started to walk toward me. I looked around for an ashtray, thinking I must be in a no-smoking area, but instead of scolding me, the guard smiled and asked if I had another cigarette to spare. "This is your first trip to Kenya, yes?" he asked as I gave him a light. "That's right." "I see." He squatted down beside me. "You are from America. You know my brother's son, perhaps, Samson Otieno. He is studying engineering in Texas." I told him that I'd never been to Texas, and so hadn't had the opportunity to meet his nephew. This seemed to disappoint him, and he took several puffs from his cigarette in quick succession. By this time, the last of the other passengers on my flight had left the terminal. I asked the guard if any more bags were coming. He shook his head doubtfully. "I don't think so," he said. "But if you will just wait here, I'll find someone who can help you." He disappeared around a narrow corridor, and I stood up to stretch my back. The rush of anticipation had drained away, and I smiled with the memory of the homecoming I had once imagined for myself. Clouds lifting, old demons fleeing, the earth trembling as ancestors rose up in celebration. Instead, I felt tired and abandoned. I was about to search for a telephone when the security guard reappeared with a strikingly beautiful woman, dark, slender, close to 6 feet tall, dressed in a British Airways uniform. She introduced herself as Miss Omoro and explained that my bag had probably been sent on to Johannesburg by mistake. "I'm awfully sorry about the inconvenience," she said. "If you'll just fill out this form, we can call Johannesburg and have it delivered to you as soon as the next flight comes in." I completed the form and Miss Omoro gave it the once-over before looking back at me. "You wouldn't be related to Dr. Obama by any chance?" she asked. "Well, yes, he was my father." Miss Omoro smiled sympathetically. "I'm very sorry about his passing. Your father was a close friend of my family's. He would often come to our house when I was a child." We began to talk about my visit, and she told me of her studies in London as well as her interest in traveling to the States. I found myself trying to prolong the conversation, encouraged less by Miss Omoro's beauty, she had mentioned a fiancé, than by the fact that she recognized my name. That had never happened before, I realized, not in Hawaii, not in Indonesia, not in L.A. or New York or Chicago. For the first time in my life, I felt the comfort, the firmness of identity that a name might provide, how it could carry an entire history in other people's memories, so that they might nod and say knowingly, "Oh, you're so-and-so's son." No one here in Kenya would ask how to spell my name or mangle it with an unfamiliar tongue. My name belonged, and so I belonged, drawn into a web of relationships, alliances, and grudges that I did not yet understand. "Parak!" I turned to see Alma jumping up and down behind another guard who wasn't letting her pass into the baggage area. I excused myself and rushed over to her, and we laughed and hugged as silly as the first time we'd met. A tall, brown-skinned woman was smiling beside us, and Alma turned and said, "Barak, this is our auntie Zaituni, our father's sister." "Welcome home," Zaituni said, kissing me on both cheeks. I told him about my bag and said there was someone here who had known the old man, but when I looked back to where I'd been standing, Miss Omoro was nowhere in sight. I asked the security guard where she had gone. He shrugged and said that she must have left for the day.